It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
3-2 pitch. Fastball belted deep right. Long gone.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Rameen on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of Overtime. It is hump day, middle of the week, whatever you want to call it. It is wild and wonderful, but not too wonderful for the Minnesota Wild, as Seth Tupel of Locked On Wild and the Locked On Wild podcast will be joining us here at about 11:20, recapping another disappointing loss for Minnesota in the second round series against the Colorado Avalanche, which, by the way, I don't know if you saw it or not or heard from your Avs fan friends overnight about the snow in Denver pregame last night. Pretty darn special for May the 5th, but now May the 6th. Minnesota not down or down, but not out to the series. 2-0 following another loss last night, 5-2 in game 2. We're talking Wild. Seth Tupel joining us about 20 minutes from now on today's program. At the end of the hour, we're going to test your wits with the identity crisis, an NFL figure of the past, and a surprising one. Should be pretty easy, I would say, but a name that might bring a smile to your face, might make you put your head into your palm like that if you're a fan of a particular area team. That's all the clues I'm giving for the identity crisis. If you tell me who I'm talking about before any of your neighbors on the ESPN hotline, 605-362-3776, you score an OPH gift card and more right here on the show. That identity crisis coming up 11:45, latest from the NFL and college football offseason rankings. We'll find anything to talk about regarding football these days. Schedule release in the NFL coming up. We also highlighted your offseason post-draft power rankings yesterday, where my Packers slot in as the 7th best team in the NFL right now. Vikings 24th. Brutal. Way too low, in my opinion, at ESPN.com. We're going to dive into college football offseason rankings for the Power 4 programs. So, yeah, we're talking Hawkeyes, Cyclones, Gophers, Huskers, and let you know where they fall in their respective conferences. And a spoiler alert, things not looking too good this offseason out there in Ames for Iowa State, according to that article at ESPN.com. We break those down at the end of hour one, fire it up for hour two, headlines and highlights. Augie softball not in action today at the NSIC tournament. They are in action tomorrow against Mankato, as the baseball tourney and softball tourney for the Northern Sun, both here in Sioux Falls, action beginning today. We're talking Augie softball. Head coach Greta Melsted joins us about 12:20, and we wrap up the show with whip around coverage, as well as the can't miss Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, brought to you by your local Lewis Drug and Lewis Lawn and Garden. Help your home, lawn, garden shine this time of year with an assist from your local Lewis Drug. Let's get right into it and dive into the scorecard. NBA basketball last night, first game of the series between two proud Midwest franchises, Cleveland and Detroit. Detroit went down 3-1 against the Orlando Magic in their first series of the postseason. They're not going to go down 3-1, at least not yet. They're up 1-0 after a 111-101 victory over Cleveland, a 37-21 first quarter margin. And Vince Goodwill of ESPN thinks that the 3-1 deficit in the first series might just end up helping this Pistons team.
If you've never experienced anything, you got to go through some adversity beyond, man, we were a team that lost 28 straight games 2 years ago. Like, you don't want that to be the only source of adversity. Going down 3-1, when you play elimination game after elimination game after elimination game, you find out what you got. You find out what you're made of.
And Cleveland falling to Detroit in game one, 111-101. Cade Cunningham, 23 points to lead the Pistons. Then later in the night, 17 turnovers, one part of the issue for the Lakers in an 18-point loss in Oklahoma City, 108-90. The Thunder won every quarter last night. Chet Holmgren, 24 points and 12 rebounds. Some people might be surprised. Monica McNutt, not surprised by the performance by OKC last night.
When I look at this, there's three things that are just glaring to me. You've got the younger team, the deeper team, and the better team. And we're not talking about a young group just trying to ascend. We're talking about the defending champs, y'all. Like, this is a whole different level of we know exactly how to manage 16 victories to hoist the Larry O'Brien Trophy.
OKC, a 108-90 winner in Game 1 there. Tonight in the NBA, Sixers at the Knicks, 6 o'clock on ESPN. New York leads at 1-0. They're a 7.5-point favorite in Game 2. T-Wolves and the Spurs do it again from San Antonio, 8:30 tonight on ESPN. Minnesota, of course, an upset in Game 1. They lead at 1-0. San Antonio nearly a double-digit favorite tonight. That spread hanging at 9.5 as of this morning. Michael Wilbon tasked with answering the question, who can challenge OKC this year?
The two teams I thought could challenge OKC, they're out. Mm-hmm. I thought if the Celtics get to the finals, they could certainly do it.
Right.
Just given the recent pedigree. And I thought Denver could do it. Both gone.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So who's standing? The Knicks can challenge. Yeah, the Knicks can challenge OKC, and so can Minnesota. You know, I mean, Minnesota could. I wonder about San Antonio once again for the same reason. Just not enough playoff experience. Could they challenge him? Of course they can challenge him. When you have a player as great as Victor Wembanyama and somebody like Stephon Castle, challenge him. But OKC right now, they just rampage through the opposition right now. And, I'm having to revise.
Having a hard time. Michael Wilbon again talking about OKC tonight in the Western Conference second round. T-Wolves and the Spurs, 8:30 on ESPN. Let's talk about desperation in the NBA postseason. How can that add some fuel to the fire at this stage? More from Vince Goodwill here.
There's a desperation. Cleveland has to be desperate because you don't know how many times you're going to get at this. Yep. The Knicks have to be desperate. San Antonio knows we're playing with house money. Mm. Internally, they didn't make moves at the trade deadline that said, we have to go and get it right now. They're saying, let's watch this thing grow. But in the playoffs, desperation usually wins out if all things are created equal. Minnesota's more desperate.
That's Vince Goodwill talking desperation. Now the Boston Celtics, a unceremonious end to their season. Retrospectively, you look back beginning of the year to now, you say, wow, they made the postseason, made a little noise while they were there, but they didn't have Jason Tatum, right? There's no big deal. They did get Jason Tatum back for a while. Here's Brad Stevens, the president of basketball operations, on why Tatum didn't play in Game 7.
You could see it at the end of Game 6. We thought that it would dissipate and be okay the next day. He didn't do very much on Friday, just rested, and then came in on Saturday morning and tried to do a workout. I watched it, and clearly didn't feel right. It's not like a long-term concern, but it certainly didn't look right when he was working out and didn't feel right. So it made sense to be smart about that. I mean, I think the obvious answer, Bobby, is anytime you're coming back from an injury like he was coming from, you know, there's a tendency to overcompensate. You know, there's probably a little bit of that there.
And that's Brad Stevens talking postseason about his Boston Celtics squad. A lot of questions emerging about the future of Tatum, future of Brown, future of the Celtics. Here's Brian Windhorst on the options surrounding Jaylen Brown's contract in Boston.
From Boston's standpoint, this is very simple. In July, Jaylen Brown has the opportunity to sign a contract extension with the Celtics. If he is happy with the Celtics, it's a huge one. It can be $70 million a year. He's just coming off his best season. You're going to offer it. If he's happy with the Celtics, sign. See you in September. If he's not happy with the Celtics and he's like, listen, I'm not sure I want to be here, trade. Obviously, the trade execution would be a little different. This is all going to take care of itself. And like Vinny said, Brown is younger, healthier, and plays the style that has won a championship. I think if you're Boston, you're like, I'm holding on to Jaylen Brown. But if Jaylen Brown doesn't want to be here and he's going to go complain on media for the next year, he can address it when he doesn't sign the extension and you can deal with it.
And that's all from the NBA for now. Over to the NHL. Stanley Cup playoffs last night. A standalone game for the Minnesota Wild. Fresh off a 9-6 loss in Game 1. They go down in Denver 5-2 last night. Nathan MacKinnon, one goal and two helpers in the win. Teammate Gabriel Landeskog on the difference in MacKinnon's game.
Having Nate makes my job a lot easier, for sure. I think he's, you know, we talk about it every time, but he's our driving force offensively. And tonight, you know, and really since the playoffs started, defensively he's been a beast as well. So, you know, you talk about my leadership, but I think Nate's leadership is something that goes a lot under the radar. Means a lot to our team.
Full recap of that one, a 5-2 loss in game two on the way in about 15 minutes. Seth Tuple of Locked On Wild will be joining us here around 11:25. Tonight in the NHL, Canadians and Sabres game one from Buffalo, 6 o'clock on TNT. Sabres favored -130 on the puck line. Ducks and the Golden Knights game two from Vegas and 8:30. Puck drop on TNT. Vegas a favorite to go up 2-0 in that series, -170 this morning at DraftKings Sportsbook. Over to the world of Major League Baseball. Fresh off a day off, Minnesota blitzed their way beyond the Nationals 11-3 in a win yesterday. Taj Bradley pretty darn solid. A lot of bats coming to play, especially early. Here's Brooks Lee.
Pitch pulled into the right field corner for Brooks. Stay fair. It is a fair ball and it bounces off the wall. Here comes Cody Clements. He's going to score. Keyshaw will round. The throw is cut. No throw to the plate. Keyshaw sprawls across the dish with the go-ahead run. It's a two-run double to right for Brooks Lee. And the Minnesota Twins are on top 2-1 here in the second.
So in the second inning, first couple runs there scored by Minnesota. Down to the eighth inning. Top of the eighth, Byron Buxton. Another long ball.
This is the time to add on for that bullpen and build this four-run lead. Pitch on the way. Swung on and hit high in the air. Deep left field for Buxton. Does it have the legs? It does. Three-run homer for Byron Buxton. His 11th of the year. And how about that for your first hit with a runner in scoring position? 10-3 Twins as the Buck Truck rounds third.
There you go, Byron Buxton. Not close with the rest of the team. 11 homers this year, playing some of the best baseball of his career in conjunction with last season. Byron Buxton, a big reason why Minnesota in the victor circle yesterday. 11-3 the final, 16-20 the new record for Minnesota. Taj Bradley now 4-1 with a 2.87 ERA. Here's Shelty talking about the day off and also the maturation of Bradley on the mound.
Yeah, I was actually a little concerned, you know, especially after the first two, that we were going to have to really shorten it. I mean, he ended up, 96, I think, that he was efficient was really important. And the fact he had an extra day. You know, we had the off day yesterday, so he got an extra day. But, you know, really good start, I think, again. And I know I continue to say this maybe a little bit at nauseum, but we just continue to see maturity out of him.
And Minnesota wins 11-3. They'll meet up with the Nationals in D.C. 5:45 the start time, 5 o'clock pregame coverage this evening on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Other notable AL Central finals from yesterday. Boston beat up Detroit in Detroit 10-3. Cleveland fell in Kansas City 5-3. And the White Sox are not going to be back to .500 just yet. They fall in L.A. against the Angels 4-3 the final. White Sox are 17-19. Worth noting, couple postponements yesterday. Milwaukee and St. Louis postponed, as well as the Mets and the Rockies. Today and tonight, we'll see the Brewers and Cardinals underway in about an hour from St. Louis. White Sox at Angels 3:05. Other matchups, Red Sox at Tigers, Reds at Cubs, Guardians at Royals, Rockies host the Mets, the nightcap at 8:20. And one more time, Minnesota in D.C., 5:45 for game two, 5 o'clock, your pregame coverage. Into the National Football League, Minnesota Vikings have officially opened up their search for their next general manager. Rob Brzezinski, current interim GM, wants the job, interviewing for the job, some would say a front runner. There's a couple other names out there that have been injected into that interview process. We'll touch on that a little bit deeper later on in the show, but let's talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're sitting, waiting, and wishing on 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers. Michelle Smallman, not too kind to Pittsburgh in this clip.
They've been on this carousel of consignment quarterbacks for a while now. I think we collectively just need to acquiesce and look at what they are as an organization and say, you're not what you once were. We need to change our viewpoint of them. We need to stop giving them the benefit of the doubt and assigning their history to present day, because they're not the same organization they once were.
They're not the same organization they once were, but they are still an enviable organization regardless of that. I agree with right now being pretty stinky, nasty, and yucky by Steelers standards. But I also think there's at least 10 franchises in the NFL that would love to win 8, 9, 10 games every year, would love to have a shot at the postseason and have a loyal fan base back them up, because the consistency is there. The consistent greatness remains in Pittsburgh. The rings lately, not so much. The excellence in the postseason, not so much. But they're navigating putrid quarterback play, quarterback consistency, turnover at that position seemingly every single year, at least questions at that position every year since the latter stages of Big Ben's career with Devlin Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph and Justin Fields and Kenny Pickett and others. But the Steelers still pretty darn good and navigating that pretty decently. But yeah, not a great time to be a Steeler fan based on the last 10, 20, 30, 50 years of excellence there in the Steel City. Now, a couple important dates before we move off the scorecard in the world of golf. PGA Championship coming up next weekend. Phil Mickelson told you yesterday he could play. That is changing. He will not play. Max Homa going to be in the lineup instead of Phil Mickelson coming up next week for the PGA Championship. And tennis, worth noting, the French Open beginning before the end of the month, May 23rd, running through June the 7th. Let's dive right in to your ReliaBank headlines of the day. Hour number one, South Dakota women's basketball set to renew a rivalry with a regional foe at the Sanford Pentagon this fall as the Yotes will take on the Creighton Blue Jays in women's basketball on November 11th. Sanford Sports made the announcement yesterday afternoon. South Dakota, no stranger to the Pentagon, having played at the venue 11 times prior, holding a record of 6-5. Creighton is playing at the Pentagon for just the second time. They won their previous lone matchup back in 2023. Full details there, sanfordsports.com, goyotes.com as well. Let's move forward. The South Dakota State women's basketball team has accepted an invite to participate in a very unique event called the 2026 USA Basketball 3X Women's Showcase coming up over the weekend, May 9th through the 10th at Arizona Athletic Grounds in Mesa. Tournament will feature 8 teams vying to be crowned 3X Showcase champion, and the 4 Jackrabbit ladies that are on the way to compete, Molly Abdouche, Hillary Behrens, Emily Fox, and Maggie Hartwig, will make up the 4-player Jackrabbit team. Other NCAA programs expected to attend: Arizona State, Fairfield, that was attorney team, Kansas State, Stephen F. Austin, and more. Field will also feature a pair of teams made up of athletes participating in the development camp. Preliminary games will tip off on May the 9th, and the bracket play will begin the following day, May the 10th. Full details at gojacks.com. Speaking of those Jacks, SDSU yesterday swept the Summit League Baseball Weekly Awards with Nate Wachter earning Quick Star Peak Performer of the Week and Ty Madison receiving Quick Star Peak Pitcher of the Week honors. That full article, gojacks.com. Augie softball landed 6 all-conference selections yesterday, including 3 on the first team announced by the league yesterday afternoon. The Vikings are highlighted by NSIC Freshman of the Year, Kiera Lubovich, and Newcomer of the Year, Claire Wienja. As that article at GoAugie.com, Wienja out of Del Rapids, Lubovich here out of Lincoln High School in Sioux Falls. Congratulations in order there. And lastly, we'll dive into USF Cougar softball as well. USF standout Maddie Duncan has been named to the Northern Sun Intercollegiate Conference All-Conference First Team. Very well-deserving. Duncan was 15-10 in the regular season across 30 appearances, 27 starts, and she went 177 innings and posted a stellar 1.86 ERA, limited opponents to a 1.83 batting average, and struck out 223 batters. That ranks among the top marks in the conference and continued her climb up the program's all-time leaderboard. Those are your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number one. Keep it local all the time. Go Jacks, go Yotes, go Augie, USFCougars.com, the place to visit your Big Four news coverage there. That's the ReliaBank headlines of the day. For a better local banking option, check them out online at ReliaBank.com or in person here in the Sioux Empire. Well, our neighboring state out to our east, the state of hockey, looking to prove their mettle against the Colorado Avalanche, a team that has had a flurry of goals and opportunities in the series so far. You can count them. They have netted 14 goals in the first 2 games of the series against the Wild. Minnesota down 2-0. Series shifts coming up on Saturday. Prolonged break in the series, but on Saturday, it's game 3 from St. Paul. We'll get the highlights, the headlines, what needs to change moving forward with Seth Tuple of the Locked On Wild podcast. He joins us coming up next on this Wednesday, May 6th edition of Overtime.
The best sporting matchups and coverage. We are ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
just getting going on this middle of the week Wednesday edition of Overtime. Well, it was a pretty cool sight last night in Denver, the pregame snow, as we got snow in May. Unfortunately, the winter weather not a benefit to the Minnesota Wild. They go down 5-2 in Denver in a 2-0 lead for the Avalanche, who appear to be pretty darn good, pretty darn deep, and dangerous the rest of the way in the postseason. Minnesota looking to scratch and claw their way back into the series. It'll shift to St. Paul coming up on Saturday. Joining us right now to help us make some ones and twos of the series so far is Seth Topal, who is the host of the Locked On Wild show, Locked On Wild podcast, available on Twitter at Locked On Wild. Seth, welcome into the show, my friend. How you doing today?
Hey, doing great. Appreciate you having me on so much. I wish it was under better circumstances, mm-hmm. but hopefully a couple of days off for the Wild to kind of lick their wounds and gear up for game three.
Seth, I know there were a lot of people screaming at their TVs in Minnesota last night about the penalty kill. That's been an issue for a while in the postseason for Minnesota. It was part of the Jekyll and Hyde series against Dallas, especially early. The penalty kill was good. Minnesota won. When it was bad, they lost. And that was kind of the story of that series early on. What did you take away from last night? I know the penalty kill has to be pretty darn top of mind.
Yeah, it's that, and it's the rough start. Philip Gustafson getting the start in game two, gives up a goal on the first shot that he faces on a puck that he mishandled. And so right at that point, right off the drop, you are already behind the eight ball, and it's not a spot you can be against this Colorado Avalanche team. They are too good. They're too deep. If you're going to beat Colorado, you have to earn every bit that you get. You can't hand them opportunities and expect them to not capitalize on them. And the Wild they got back into the game at points, but they just have not consistently through the first two games of this series. They haven't played their game. They tried to kind of keep up with the Avalanche in game one. In game two, there was a little bit more of kind of the return to earth, but Scott Wedgwood made great saves. The offense stopped the attack from in front. So there were some points, but by and large, you have to really play your game for the whole game if you want to have a chance to beat this team.
Seth Topal, who is the host of the Locked On Wild podcast, is our guest here on a Wednesday edition of Overtime. Seth, before we go any further, man, I know that podcast continues to get some traction. Tell our listeners out there how to engage with the show, where to find it, and maybe some highlights on a nightly, weekly basis for the program.
Yeah, for sure. You can find the show on all your favorite podcast platforms. We're on Apple. We're on Spotify. Just search Locked On Wild. We are growing and growing on YouTube. We do live post games after most games in the playoffs, and we try to mix them in as much as we can in the regular season too. So it's a chance to hop on YouTube and interact with me and to be kind of part of the community there, which is always fun. So make sure to check us out on YouTube. We've got some big guests that are in the works for the rest of this week to try to pump us up and gear us back up for game three. So just having a lot of fun with it, and we are going to have plenty to discuss in the offseason too. It's a daily show, 30 minutes, so there is always something to talk about, and if you haven't checked it out yet, I encourage you to do so.
And again, you can follow on Twitter at Locked On Wild. Seth's personal account, Seth Topes, T-O-U-P-S. Let's talk about the goaltender spot. Of course, retrospectively, hindsight 2020 appears to be a massive mistake to pivot to Gustafson. But again, to be fair, Volstead gave up eight goals in game one in a 9-6 loss. What do you make about the decision and where it gets made on Saturday? You got a long break here. What do you think happens for the goalie spot ahead of game three?
I think we will see Jesper get back in the net. I mean, I got to be honest, some of the comments that Philip Gustafson made at the end of the season and even after last night's game have just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Mm-hmm. He was asked how he felt after the start last night, and he said, I felt fine. I didn't feel good. I didn't feel bad. I felt okay. He said mentally, he said he's in an okay spot. So it just, that stuff kind of rubs me wrong. After he said at the end of the season, he had a stretch where he allowed four more goals in five of his last six starts. And he said point blank at the end of the season, he's like, I don't know why we're taking account these starts when there is nothing to play for. And it's like, that may not be wrong, but you also still have to play the games. So I think they will go back to Jesper. I think one of the reasons that they made the switch in game two was the right side faceoff circle was a consistent attack spot for the Avalanche. I think they had four or five of their goals from that spot. So I think they went to Gustafsson to allow Jesper a little chance to see what they were attacking him with. And the hopes now that he's got the full week to look at that, to try to address that and be ready for it come Saturday. I think this was always kind of a last-ditch effort to play Filip Gustavsson and hope that maybe he would kind of take control and just not give it back. But he did the exact opposite of that in game two. So I would not be surprised at all if the Wild go back to Jesper for game three.
Talking Minnesota Wild, future of that second-round Western Conference playoff series with Seth Topol, the host of the Locked On Wild podcast. Seth, let's talk health updates. Of course, Minnesota was down a pair of notables last night. Jonas Brodin, Joel Eriksson-Ek. What's the latest you can tell us about those players and any other health concerns for Saturday's Game 3?
I think on the Jonas Brodin front, if we're using standard designations, I think he's probably doubtful for the series. From what Michael Russo said earlier in the week, he's quite a ways off. And that tracks with seeing him in a walking boot and on crutches after the shot block in game five. So I would say his return in this series is highly doubtful. Joel Eriksson-Ek is somewhat closer, but how close exactly is anybody's guess. That looked gnarly when he slid into the boards and his ankle was the first thing to hit. That looks pretty gruesome. So I would imagine he's dealing with some sort of a high ankle type situation, if not a full break. So I would say his status, he's going to try to gut through it. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see him in game three or game four. The question is going to be how effective can he be? Because if he's not, this could be a repeat of what we saw in 2022-2023 when he works like crazy to come back from that broken leg, and that lasted all of 19 seconds in game three.
So we'll see exactly what happens. Game three coming up on Saturday, and the series shifts back to St. Paul for the Minnesota Wild. Talking with Seth Topol, the host of the Locked On Wild show. Let's talk about the Colorado Avalanche, man. I know it's hard to pay compliments to a bitter rival, especially in the postseason, down 2-0 in the series. But what is enviable about Colorado in your eyes? What stands out about this team that makes them a title contender?
Their depth down the middle, for one, is very enviable. They have Nazem Kadri, who I know he's not the player that he once was, but having him as your third line center is a pretty big luxury. And I think the Wild saw a good example last night of what you need to have your superstar players do in elevating your game to a new level. Nathan MacKinnon last night was flying all over the ice, and he was using his body. He was throwing his body weight around because he's been in this spot before. The Avs have been in this spot a bunch, and they know what it takes to win these games. And when the games are in the balance, you've got to have guys step up and make plays. And the Wild don't have a ton of experience past the first round, so they're still learning kind of what it takes to take over these types of games. And to a man, it just seems like everybody on that Avs roster is up in their game, and the Wild, through the first two games, have not been able to match that.
Host of the Locked On Wild podcast, Seth Topol, is our guest here on this Wednesday edition of Overtime. It's ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO. You can find the podcast wherever you get yours. Also follow along on YouTube, live post-game reaction, and so much more. Seth, before we cut you loose, man, one or two most important players the rest of the way for Minnesota. I would imagine one's going to be between the pipes, but fire away with your one or two most important Wild players the rest of the series.
You are 100% correct that the goaltending is a given. So I'll give you two players on top of that. Number one, Matt Boldy. He has not scored yet in this series. He had a fantastic series against the Dallas Stars. He just has not been able to get to that level yet. If he does, that is a massive lift for the Minnesota Wild. On the other side, somebody has got to step in and take over that spot for Jonas Brodin on defense, whether it be Damon Hunt, whether it be Jake Middleton having a better performance than he had in games one or two. Somebody has to step into that spot. That second pairing cannot be as bad as it's been. I think Jared Spurgeon and Jake Middleton are -7 in the series so far, which is just, it's crazy to think of a two-game span being -7. But that pairing has been awful. So somebody's going to have to step up and shore that up too. If the Wild can get some saves in net and can get a little bit more from those two spots, I think they certainly can win Game 3.
There you have it. Game 3 preview. Most important players the rest of the way for Minnesota. Game 3, we got to wait. Some scheduling conflicts with the arena there, Grand Casino Arena in St. Paul. Game 3 going to be Saturday night, 8 o'clock on TNT, True TV, and HBO Max. Stay tuned. Stay locked on to Locked On Wild. That's Seth Topol on a Wednesday. Seth, appreciate the time, man. You're welcome back anytime. Have a great rest of the week.
Thank you. You too. Anytime you want me on, I am happy to come back.
All right. That's Seth Topol, the host of Locked On Wild. He's tagged in today's show log. It's easy to find the show on YouTube, Locked On Wild, wherever you get your podcast, same. And then on Twitter, tagged in today's show log at Locked On Wild. There's your fill of hockey talk on a Wednesday. For now, we'll come back with the identity crisis. Who the heck am I talking about today? I told you loyal listeners off the jump. A few different courtesy clues, but a former NFL football player on my mind, a memorable one who had a tremendously short NFL career. The identity crisis, NFL latest and college football offseason rankings at ESPN.com. We'll break those down coming up next on this middle of the week Wednesday edition of Overtime right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
Streaming live online and with the app, this is Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome back to Overtime on your Sioux Falls sports leader. It's time to test your wits. Hopefully you brought them with you today. It's the identity crisis brought to you by the original Pancake House. I offer up a sports figure, personality, past or present, in this case, past. And you have to identify the man or woman that is in the sports world. 605-362-3776. If you're the first caller to do so, you win the prize pack. It's that easy. Let's let it rip. It's the identity crisis on a Wednesday on Overtime.
What do you know about Ray Finkel?
Soccer-style kicker. Graduated from Collier High, June 1976. Stetson University honors graduate, class of 1980. Holds two NCAA Division I records, one for most points in a season, one for distance. Former nicknamed the Mule, the first and only pro athlete ever to come out of Collier County, and one hell of a model American.
Well, this is exhausting. Let's see if you can tell us the sports figure we're talking about in today's identity crisis on Overtime.
Every Wednesday, we test your wits with the identity crisis. It's brought to you by the original Pancake House in Sioux Falls. They will be busy for Mother's Day around the corner. Check them out, originalpancakehousesiouxfalls.com. Join the wait list on the way. Skip the line at OPH. You'll find the very best in breakfast. Check them out. Crispy thick bacon, huge omelets, fresh squeezed OJ, hot coffee, and so much more. All served with a smile at OPH. That's 41st in Kiwanis here in the 605. Your courtesy clue off the jump today was a former NFL football player. And if you are into draft busts, you got this one on your mind. I would imagine 605-362-3776, the number to dial. You cannot start dialing me just yet. I'm hanging up on whoever that is. I'm sorry. Wait till I start giving out the clues. Fair play for everybody. Here we go. Clue number one, a former NFL quarterback. Clue two, wore number 8 for the entirety of his NFL career. This particular quarterback went to UCLA. That's the University of California, Los Angeles. Played in the National Football League for just 2 statistical seasons, but 4 seasons overall, 1999 to 2002. This player played for the Chicago Bears. and then had a cup of coffee with no stats with the Dolphins and the Niners. Who the heck am I talking about today? Former NFL player, quarterback, number 8, UCLA, 99 to 2002, played for the Bears, Dolphins, and Niners, and in the 1999 NFL draft, he was the 12th overall pick, and that was a quarterback-laden NFL draft in round number 1. Tim Couch, Donovan McNabb, Akili Smith, also in that draft, some dude named Dante Culpepper, and then this player, who was taken 12th overall. Somebody's got to know this name, 605-362-3776. If you're a Bear fan, if your spouse is a Bear fan, you probably heard this name yelled at your TV back in the early 2000s. What the heck is this kid doing? Line number 1, you're on with Overtime. What's your name?
This is Marty.
Marty, do you have the correct answer today, Marty?
Is it Cade McNown?
Cade McNown is correct. Marty, I got you. I know who you are. I got your last name. I'll put the prize back for you at the front desk. Job well done to Marty, our big winner of today's identity crisis, brought to you by the Original Pancake House. Now, I don't want to pile on here. Maybe I'm a little bit off base, but we talk about massive quarterback busts, and we talk about Jamarcus Russell. You talk about other guys that were drafted near the top of a draft or at the top of a draft, or Ryan Leaf type. And you say, that guy didn't have it. How about Cade McNown? What an obscurely weird career he had. 2 seasons in Chicago, 2 seasons without recording a stat with Miami and the Niners, and then, whoop, out of the league. Out of the league. Lost his job to the likes of Shane Matthews and Jim Miller in the Windy City back in the early 2000s. Of course, that was the carousel. The Bears have had a little bit more stability at quarterback since that time. But that was pretty ugly, nasty, and yucky for a while with the Eric Kramers of the world, infusion of talent there with Jay Cutler, Kyle Orton, many, many guys rotating through Chicago. But that one, Cade McNown, did not work out. The number 12 overall pick in the 1999 NFL draft out of UCLA. There were some arm strength concerns coming out. I was reading about the very established source Wikipedia this morning, but an obscurely short career for Cade McNown, a very memorable person and player, a college football Hall of Famer in his own right. Today's identity crisis brought to you by the Original Pancake House. Congratulations to Marty, our big winner today. Let's get into the latest NFL news you need to know about. An update on LT, the original LT, Lawrence Taylor, has been discharged from the hospital following a stint for a stomach-related issue. The attorney for Taylor announced as much yesterday. Mark Iglarsh said in an email to the Associated Press that Taylor is returning home to Florida after being hospitalized in Morristown, New Jersey, since late April. He's grateful to be on the road to recovery, hopes to be back on the golf course soon, the attorney said, adding that the 67-year-old expressed appreciation to the staff at Morristown Medical Center. Taylor, of course, spent his entire career with the Giants from 1981 to 1993, helped them win the Super Bowl 2 times while being an 8-time AP All-Pro selection, and also earned MVP honors in 1986. That's good news. Lawrence Taylor out of the hospital after a relatively lengthy hospital stay in New Jersey. Well, good court case news, good legal news for a pair of NFL players yesterday. We'll start with Tennessee Titans corner, former Chief Legarius Sneed. A charge against him stemming from a shooting at a Dallas car dealership in December of 2024 has been dropped. Sneed's Dallas-based criminal defense attorney, Michael Todd, made the announcement. Sneed originally charged with aggravated assault, but the charge was reduced to a misdemeanor offense of failure to report a felony under circumstances in which serious bodily injury or death may have resulted in knowingly failing to immediately report the commission of the offense to a law enforcement officer. All sorts of legal mumbo jumbo. What you need to know, charge against Legarius Sneed was dropped. Full details at ESPN.com. That's also where you'll find the full story, if you want it, about Stephon Diggs, the former Patriot wide receiver, former Bill wide receiver, former Viking wide receiver, and maybe future Viking wide receiver. You never know. Stephon Diggs found not guilty yesterday of assaulting his private chef in a pay dispute. The 4-time Pro Bowl wide receiver pleaded not guilty in February to felony strangulation charges and misdemeanor assault and battery charge stemming from the alleged dispute. The trial only lasted 2 days. Stephon Diggs found not guilty yesterday of the assault charges and accusations in that particular case. Again, full details there, ESPN.com. Let's stay with the Vikings here. Minnesota has officially started the search process for their next general manager after the firing of Kwesi Adofo-Mensah following the season. Rob Brzezinski occupied the interim role for the NFL draft and free agency carousel and still is sitting in that interim spot. He wants the job, but they also are still doing their due diligence, leaving no stones unturned. The old mumbo jumbo out there. Pro Football Talk on the news that they have announced their first outside candidate for the job. Tom Pelissero of NFL Media reports that the team has requested an interview with Bills assistant general manager Terrence Gray. Vikings fired Kwesi Adofo-Mensah in January, and executive VP of football operations, cap wizard, contract wizard, Rob Brzezinski assumed the duties. Gray has been with the Bills since 2017, but he's not unfamiliar to Minnesota. He spent the previous 11 years as a scout for the Vikings, so there is familiarity with the organization ahead of any scheduled interview. Terrence Gray, reportedly in conversation with the Vikings, a possible candidate for the future general manager of the squad. That news this morning at Pro Football Talk, NBCSports.com. The Green Bay Packers finally got to hear from their special teams and defensive coordinator new hires just earlier this week, and Packers defensive coordinator Jonathan Gannon. Pro Football Talk on the news has been running defenses in the NFL for a while, but not anyone expecting the coach in Green Bay to look like the ones he employed at Arizona and Philly. Gonna be disappointed. That was the message from Gannon when he spoke to reporters at a press conference this week in Titletown. Gannon said that, quote, "We develop the playbook when we get here." And he told players that they'll be seeing tape from a long list of teams to illustrate the things, because Gannon doesn't really get caught up in what he's done before. "I just believe you got to continually, every year, try to adapt and solve problems with your guys in mind before scheme. I truly believe it's not what you play, it's how you play. It's a player's game, and you know what I mean. And everyone fits into winning. Everybody's role might be different, but it all fits into winning, and you have to perform your role at a high level." The last time Jonathan Gannon was a standalone defensive coordinator, things were pretty darn good for Philadelphia, so we'll wait and see. Hopefully, a boost for the Packer defense, which will get boosted by the return of Micah Parsons, Devontae Wyatt, and hopefully burgeoned by the draft class, Deny Dennis Sutton, Brandon Cisse, Chris McClellan, and more for the Green Bay Packers. Now, good news, really good news from the NFL. Negotiations between the NFL and the Referees Association on a new collective bargaining agreement have progressed far enough that the union has scheduled a ratification vote for tomorrow night. When formally approved by both sides, the agreement would avoid the need for replacement officials this year. The existing CBA is set to expire at the end of the month. Really good news. Nobody wants replacement refs, and the NFL might say, "We'll be fine, we'll be fine." They got to be worried about it based on the criticism of the regular referees in the postseason and on a weekly basis during the regular season. Did they get that right? What is a catch? What is down by contact? What qualifies as possession? There's a lot of questions for casual and diehard NFL fans that need answering from the regular referees. We cannot stomach another foray into replacement referees in the National Football League. It appears like we will be staving off that possibility just tomorrow night. The New York Giants continue to address their defensive tackle spot after saying so long to Dexter Lawrence last month. The team has agreed to a 2-year, $12.5 million contract to sign veteran defensive tackle DJ Reader. Reader can make up to $15.5 million after incentives, according to Jeremy Fowler. The move comes more than 2 weeks after the Giants traded standout defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence to the Bengals. They also drafted Bobby Jamison Travis in the sixth round last month, but they bring in big DJ Reader, veteran 31-year-old, spent the last two seasons with Detroit, previously played for the Bengals and the Texans. Other news to get to. Let's shift gears to college football quickly. The American Football Coaches Association is recommending some changes to the college football calendar that would end the season by the second Monday in January, while also pushing for increased access to the college football playoff. This is interesting news. Fire up the debate cannons. The AFCA board announced yesterday four different proposed calendar changes: ending conference championship games for good, reducing open weeks and seasons from two to one, preserving an exclusive window for the Army-Navy game in December, but allowing postseason games to be played on the same day, and reducing the minimum number of days between games to no fewer than six. The proposal comes 2 weeks after the NCAA's Football Oversight Committee recommended that the regular season begin earlier on the Thursday of what is now known as Week Zero, starting in 2027. I'm a fan of quite a lot of this. I'm also a fan of the conference championship games going out, getting rid of them for the Power Four. I don't know if this is everybody, but for the Power Four, I think it makes sense. You can sweep those things out because generally speaking, if you have a worthy resume and you're in a conference championship game for the CFP, you're likely to be there anyway, and you're not going to have a whole lot of jockeying and jostling there that's good for anybody. You stave off some injuries, keep everybody healthy for the CFP, and maybe it's an expansion. They're talking 24 teams in this article in the college football playoff. And frankly, it seems absolutely bonkers considering a few years ago we had four teams in a CFP, and before that, we had the BCS and just two. Takes two to tango. Every now and then there was a third team that was undefeated and worthy and could have made a lot of noise. Woulda, coulda, shoulda. But the expansion continues to just be so darn different. You say, man, do we really want that for college football? But after seeing what the FCS does year after year after year with the home games and then the neutral side championship game and the format works tried and true, I don't think it needs to change much beyond that. Of course, just like we saw with the NCAA basketball tournament, I'm sure there will be people chomping at the bit to change it beyond 24 again. But 24 feels like, to me, the max number, a really strong number. If they shorten up the season, get rid of Alabama hosting Chattanooga in week 11, mash it all together, one bye week, move it up to week zero, 24-team playoff, no conference title games for the big schools. Maybe it's for the middle schools also. Circumstantially, we'll see. But moving forward, I kind of got to say this. I know that a lot of people are a little scared, a little miffed, a little thrown off by college football. Kind of like the majority of the proposed changes as of yesterday. And then we'll round out hour number one with this news. If you consider it news, more of a opinion piece at ESPN.com. The Power Four right now, of course, the Big 12, the ACC, SEC, Big 10, they've got every single program ranked based on how they think they've handled and acquitted themselves over the offseason. And we'll start in the Big 10, where our three Big 10 immediate area programs, Iowa, Nebraska, and Minnesota, are right in the middle of the pack and successive here. So nobody had a tremendously poor offseason. Nobody lit it up either with these three programs. Minnesota comes in at number nine. They say what went wrong, Coy Parrish, is a significant loss to the team, no doubt, especially to a Big Ten competitor as the homegrown star and former top 175 recruit earned all-league honors and now will be in an Oregon uniform. Big loss for Minnesota. What went right? The Gophers brought in the core of a team that has been a consistent winner under PJ Fleck, including several players who could have jumped to the NFL or cashed in as transfers. You can view this article ESPN.com. Just click on the college football tab. Nebraska at number eight. Feels pretty darn fair, but the question marks are up in the air. Nebraska ended up with only two low-level bowl appearances from teams quarterback by Dylan Raiola, who transferred also to Oregon. Now, as for what went right for Nebraska, they emerged from Minshew's flip with another experienced, talented quarterback, and the new name is UNLV's Zach Calandria. The Mountain West Offensive Player of the Year brings in 31 career starts. Certainly the mystery at quarterback is always going to be there, but you look at the film, you look at the style and the substance of that player, you got to be a little excited for the future at the quarterback spot there in Lincoln. And then the Iowa Hawkeyes, just a smidge better. They come in at number seven. Big additions, L.J. Phillips Jr. from USD. Full article up ESPN.com, but we round it out with this, and I don't necessarily agree, because we know the caliber and quality of football coach that Jimmy Rogers is. I know that it was a sour taste the way he left SDSU, went to Washington State, now hops over to Iowa State after Matt Campbell's departure, taking the job at Penn State. A lot of movers and shakers there, but Iowa State comes in dead last in the offseason rankings of the Big 12 squads. What went wrong? Campbell took his coaches and 24 players with him to Happy Valley, including 14 starters. So it's going to be a rebuild project in Iowa State in Ames. And as far as what went right, the talented coaches coming in. Tyler Roll coached Iowa State's running backs back in 2024, spent last season in the NFL with the Detroit Lions. That's a big boost to Iowa State, as well as some other notable transfers in to Ames and the Iowa State Cyclone program. You can view all of those teams, all the articles where your team stacks up. If you're a Wisconsin fan like me, stay away. Look away. It's nasty. It's yucky. It's ugly. It stinks in Madison right now. And frankly, I thought Wisconsin would be higher because I'm somehow disillusioned enough to convince myself, oh man, we got it figured out. Our recruits are back. We're figuring it out. Another new quarterback. This one will work out. I promise. Just like I thought the last 3-4 years in Madison. It is a mess for the Badgers right now. And all you can hope is to say, can we get back to a bowl game? Can we win the same number of games that we lose? Can we sell out a home game? That would be awesome in Madison. We'll wait and see. College football right around the corner. 3.5 months away from now. But get your fill. ESPN.com. Take a break. Come back. Headlines and highlights. Auggie softball head coach Greta Melstead around the corner. And we wrap the show. Whip around coverage and the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's all coming up next on a Wednesday edition of Overtime.